Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What Cordell Patterson did last night was just, it was great. It was everything we needed. The way that he contributed running the ball was really a power runner for us. We were really down to just two backs. And Cordell just steps in, has played receiver his entire career and ends up running his tail off and was just a big spark for us. So guys like that, I mean, that's really what our team's always been about, doing whatever it takes to win and help the team win.
I'm a playmaker.
Thoughts on Cordell Patterson? That it just puts it in great context, right? Murray, you get, that's Brady last night with Jim Gray.
Tom, what do you think of your new tool bag running back?
No. But, it's we all do whatever we can to help the team win. The more you can do, the more valuable you are. It's all about doing whatever it is to get the win that week and for this team, and I'll do whatever I can for the team. Cordell, how you feel about that?
I'm a playmaker.
Your thoughts of Patterson at running back, Greg, again?
It's, you know, he's doing a fine job. They're trying to make it as easy on him as possible, just like they did with Michelle when he was out there. They give him the helper fullback, which at times leads to James Devlin targets, which, you know, we all know and love. But he's doing fine, and but it's not anything special. If they had LeGarrette Blount on the team, they could line him up and do the same thing, and it look pretty similar.
Exactly. No skill required.
Back to your phones, as promised. Joey in Londonderry. We have 10 questions going around the league coming up here in a few minutes. Joey in Londonderry, though, what do you got?
Hey, Greg, I asked Thugger the same question yesterday. With Brady playing like the way he is, with the over and unders, meaning the overaged and the under-talented, right? Is he overachieving at 41 years old with the band of misfits around him, meaning getting the 7-2 team going at 41 years old?
Okay, does he have a band of misfits around him, Greg?
No. I mean, it looks like a pretty professional offense and fine personnel to me. I mean, that's what I wrote about in the email, that it's just like, look, you have, let's just start with James White, one of the best pass catching running backs in the league. You have Julian Edelman, one of the best slot cornerbacks in the league.
Receivers.
Then you have Josh Gordon, former first-round pick. You have Philip Dorsett, former first-round pick that you traded a quarterback to get, who's been here years. You have Chris Hogan, who you signed as a restricted free agent, gave a decent bit of money to.
You have a good offensive line.
Dwayne Allen, who you've, by the end of the season, we'll have paid $9 million to.
I'm not giving you Dwayne Allen. He blows. And I'm not giving you Kenyon Barner because he's just a guy. But if you want to tell me that between Edelman, White, Hogan, Dorsett, Josh Gordon, and a really good offensive line, you've got more than enough. It's not a band of misfit toys. It's a representative offense.
Well, let me ask you this. Who's got more on offense, the Patriots or the San Francisco 49ers with C.J. Beathard? Because they torched Green Bay. And that game was in Green Bay, if I remember right.
Very good.
So, who's kidding who here?
Did San Fran have to go to all these trick plays to put up both? Because I think they scored 31 in Green Bay, didn't they?
I think it was 30, but regardless, same deal. Not that I remember. I mean, they absolutely freaking smoked them. That's the Green Bay defense I was expecting. Now, did they play better against the Rams, Green Bay? Maybe. But still, it's not a good defense.
I think. By the way, let's see. The Vikings scored 29 on the Packers. The Lions Redskins scored 31 at Lambeau. The Lions scored 31. That's Detroit. Yep, and at Washington. The Rams scored 29 on them. I mean, everybody scores 30 points on the Packers.
Except to get to your 31, you had to do all this dipsy-doo, dunkaroo, all this trickeration, which is fine. But is it a sign? I mean, whatever it takes, right? I'm not, taking the points away. But Greg's point is, why'd they have to resort to that? All these other teams are getting to 31, and they're not resorting to it.
They had to work hard for it.
This is Kevin in Arlington. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, guys? So I think they should be running trick plays against these bad defenses. Why is it so bad to pick up huge chunk yards if you know they can't stop you? I mean, if you can get 30, 35 yards on a play, why not do it? Two, I mean, why not practice it? You know, you might have to use it later in the year. And three, the coaches are so bad in the NFL, they may see it on film and still not be able to stop it because they're so bad.
Okay, then, so, yeah, Kevin, we're not talking about it being a wrong call in the vacuum of that game to win the game. Of course, do whatever it takes to win the game. We're talking about something like, now step back and think about it. Is it a bad sign that they have to resort to those plays to move the ball, that they couldn't move the ball straight up against a team that everyone's moved the ball against? That's the secondary question now.
I mean, to me, again, look, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the Patriots offense has been so good and so efficient over the years that the only time they resorted to trick plays was in times of desperation. Like, I go back to that Baltimore playoff game where they had a couple of them, right? The double pass, most notably, Edelman to Amendola.
They were using the ineligible receivers.
Right. Yeah. There was all kinds of stuff like that because they were having trouble moving the ball otherwise. But that was the Ravens. And then in the Super Bowl against the Falcons, they did it because they were having trouble against Atlanta early on. And that game didn't change until Malcolm Mitchell became a factor. And they started throwing the ball outside the numbers. Like, all of a sudden, this team can't, you know, has to resort to that against Green Bay. Like, I find that curious.
I mean, that was my takeaway thought from the game when I was watching the film was, why do they feel the need to do this? Now, look, I'm leaving it open that the Patriots are just like, you know what? Let's throw people the scent off. We're going to run this. We're going to do that. It's certainly possible. I would say the probability of that is low.
I'm just telling you, the last two, you know, one, the double pass and then the fake screen business there to Gordon were both in the second half after they had been stymied on three or four straight possessions. So it's
like
not...
the Gordon touchdown play, I don't really put as it wasn't a deceptive play. That is normal. Just because they, you know, ran, I think, fake read option, then fake the screen and then throw. They do that. I mean, they will set, that's part of being an NFL coordinator where you set up things earlier in the game. You see how they defend it, and then you bring it back so it looks the same, but then it's a different play.
So you don't put that in the same category?
No, I don't.
Fine.
I don't.
Fair enough. Steve in the car has something for us with Greg Bedard here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? I got two things. One, I really think you're reaching on this trickery, having to resort to trickery is a bad sign. I mean, isn't Bill Belichick's entire sort of manifest about fooling the opponent, getting the upper hand? I mean, isn't that what Spygate was all about? Isn't that what all this stuff's about? I mean, he's always trying to just gain the competitive advantage, and I think the trickery falls under that.
It's not the same because, again, one is schemed, sort of looking at an opponent's weaknesses and identifying where the mismatches are and then exploiting the crap out of it. One is like, you know, a sleight of hand, moving guys around and doing crazy stuff. Like, since when do they do that?
I mean, maybe they're just looking to throw people off for later in the season. I don't know. That could be a little conspiracy theory on my part. But the other thing is the linebacking core. Are we not trying to address that there's still a problem with our linebackers? Why aren't we going out and looking at Bruce Irvin? I see he's going to maybe Seattle, and we went and got that OB guy from the safety. We don't really need a safety. We need linebackers.
Okay, so the trade deadline's gone. You can't be trading for guys. You can pick guys off the waiver. Is Irvin on the waiver wire?
Yes.
He is. So I don't know.
Think he got claimed. So he's a free agent.
So your thoughts?
I'm not a big, you know, he's fast. He's a good pass rusher, and I'm sure the Patriots could make it work with him. I'm not the biggest Bruce Irvin fan. I think he was overrated in Seattle when he was first there. I thought the Raiders were stupid to give him that much money, and they were. I just don't think he's a very good football player. But I'm sure the Patriots could find a way to use him. I like the safety that they picked up. I mean, thank God they finally got younger at safety, who somebody just doesn't play special teams.
What's
the guy
name?
Obi Melifonwu or
Melifonwu? Yeah, it was a safety at Locon.
Unbelievable athlete. The guy tests out of the. He's basically like the Josh Gordon of safeties without the baggage. And the question is just how good of a football player he is. But man, that's the type of guy that I would take a risk on. And he's. I think down the stretch, you're going to see him matching up with tight ends, big receivers, things like that. He has that ability. So I really like that pickup.
Okay. We've got...
Want to talk? The linebackers.
Go.
One interesting thing, Landon Roberts did not play a snap in the first quarter, then suddenly was out there for the first snap of the second.
What are you saying?
Could have been benched in the game. But I will say, Landon Roberts has been playing great this year, especially in the weeks leading up to this game. The game before, I thought he had his best game as a Patriot. Linebackers, look, they have what they have. I mean, what are they going to do?
That's what I mean.
I mean,
take a shot on Urban. I would.
You would.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you get to lose? Definitely.
Well, if you're worried about a guy in the middle covering, that's not what he does. He's strictly a pass rusher. That's all he is, and he doesn't defend the run well. So I can see why maybe the Patriots aren't gung-ho to sign him.
All right, it's been a while since we've been able to do this between all the Red Sox stuff and various scheduling issues, but with the big boy in studio here, Greg Bedard, we go 10 questions around the league. It's the midpoint of the NFL season. So some midpoint thoughts here and 10 questions right after these words. I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke's blue.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub. You want the answer? You've got to ask the question.
Do you have an opinion based on if you had to go with your gut, which way it would go?
Sometimes you have to ask it over and over and over again.
Why?
This is 10 Questions with Greg Bedard and Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, here we go. 10 questions with Bedard around the league. This is the former 10 questions with Wiggy segment. Just feel like explaining the theme music here. This is Love Boat Captain by Pearl Jam. Go Google Minnesota Vikings Love Boat Scandal, and you'll know why we do this, because it's in honor of Wiggy.
Captain Wiggy.
The Love Boat Captain skipping through the okra patch. 10 questions, 10 minutes. We've got to stay on time, so we have buzzer options. Billy Lanny in for Jimmy Stewart today. What are our buzzer options, Bill?
Great year, all that. So I think Mookie Betts is a problem.
It's a great Felger and Mazz caller.
Gene LaVangie.
Or Fox 25 with Sarah Underwood in the morning. Thank you.
I was impressed by the whole package.
Yeah, of course, as usual. Next.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
That's the Gillette Stadium between every single snap. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Pollock has been better than Tuca.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I'm telling you, the first half of the dynasty. Dynasty. The first half of the dynastic run.
It's the best.
And if you don't want sucky matchups, don't suck.
Yeah, try not to suck.
He's just so good.
Okay. As usual, they all work. Billy, just pick whatever one you want.
Great year, all that. So I think Mookie Betts is a problem.
It's one of our first callers after the World Series. Yeah, great year. Okay, now Mookie Betts, boy, he's a problem. All right, so look, this is the halfway of the NFL season. You know, some teams are at 7-8 games, whatever. We didn't call this a midpoint. All right, so around the league, biggest surprise across the league at the midpoint, meaning positive. This can be a player, a team, a situation, whatever. Biggest surprise.
That Roger Goodell has basically been invisible to this point in the season.
Ooh,
and
good
it's
one.
Very pleasant and nice.
Interesting.
Oh, good one. Oh, silly me. I went with straight football. Pat Mahomes. I had no idea they were going to be this good offensively, the Chiefs. I thought that guy was an unknown. He's been an absolute stud.
I'm going with the L.A. Chargers. 6-2, 1-5 straight, game back of the Chiefs, loaded with talent, Phil Rivers at an MVP level, and they have a cream puff schedule. They're going to get in and upset someone.
Okay, they're the ones who are going to get upset. They'll because of this cream puff schedule and their wins, they'll have a home game and they'll lose it. Next!
Gene LaVangie.
Again, mornings on Fox 25. Number 9, biggest disappointment to this point.
John Gruden. I mean, he's just been a complete epic disaster.
It's a good one.
I'm shocked. I mean, look, I knew it wasn't going to be great, but, you know, he's running guys out of town. He's trading people. Khalil Mack, Amari Cooper. Like, what is going on out there?
The Jimmy Garoppolo injury was devastating. Oh, it was devastating. I mean, oh, he's so good. Devastating good to me. Oh, what a killer.
New York Giants, they bring in guys like Nate Solder. They hire offensive-minded coach in Pat Shurmur. I know Eli stinks, but I really can't believe how bad that they are.
Okay, next.
I was impressed by the whole package.
Number 8, league MVP at the half point.
Drew Brees. You know, they're arguably the best team, and he's had a great season so far.
Mahomes, again, he's been dynamite. He's been the best player in the league since week one.
I'm with Mazza on this. Already 29 touchdowns, almost 3,000 yards through 9 games. It's Pat Mahomes.
Okay, next. Easy.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Number 7, who should be the next coach of the Green Bay Packers?
I say this for just about every opening.
No, don't give me the special teams coaching.
Dave Tube.
But Dave Tube will get a job.
Okay, not in Green Bay he won't. Please.
Nick Saban. He's got Rodgers there. Oh. It's almost like a small college town. Oh. He can be hokey, him and his wife.
Oh.
It would be perfect. Oh. I would like to see Josh McDaniels go there, but the thing is like, it's a public team. Like, they're stockholders. People expect you to talk to them. Like, you know, they...
What do you mean people expect you to talk to them?
The coach. The coach has to actually answer questions.
From who?
The media, fans.
I see.
Stockholder meeting.
I see. You have to be a little more open there.
Yes. Isn't you can't nice? Just be for Foxborough.
Interesting.
Oh, gosh.
See, I usually give you the same answer on this one, too. I say
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, except I didn't on this one. I said Nick Saban.
Well, considering that they have to have, you know, speeches with the stockholders and everything, Pete Carroll. The Seahawks suck. He's going to get blown out of there. Feels like the message has gotten stale after 8 years. If he quits or gets blown out, Pete should go to Green Bay and infuse some life in the joint.
Saban in Green Bay is perfect.
Oh, God, you just made it move a little bit, guys.
Saban in Green Bay is perfect.
Let me tell you, though, if they... This should not be some first-year head coach. This should not be some, you know, even if it's, look, if they can identify the next Todd McVay, like, you know, God bless him, but...
Or Sean McVay.
Sean McVay, whatever, that guy, the guy with the trimmed beard. You know, I guess, fine, but you should be able to step in there and compete for a Super Bowl in year one.
So the other thing is, I want an answer on Saban. The whole thing in Miami was that he didn't have a quarterback, right? He picked the wrong guy.
Oh, I love
it. You got one in Green Bay now. Let's find out.
Oh, I love it. Oh,
that's Saban, so that's Saban.
So good. The talent is there. They are not. I mean, I don't think they're the most talented team in the league, but I don't think they are.
They're not far away.
They're not bereft of talent.
Nope.
They have enough talent with that quarterback to compete for a championship, if not win one.
I hope you get Pete for spite.
So
Seattle bouncing back a little bit?
But either way, you know what? Pete Carroll, I don't want him, but that's the kind of coach that this job demands. This coach should be Tom Coughlin for one last shot. It should be Nick Saban. It should be Pete Carroll. It should be Jim Harbaugh. It should be a legit guy. A legit guy to go win a Super Bowl in the next 3 to 5 years, and that's it. And so the Nick Saban thing, wow, I'm going to give that some thought. Next! I was saying to these guys yesterday, Greg, I haven't been to Foxborough for a game in like 10 years since I stopped covering the team. Like in 10 years, I couldn't believe my ears and my eyes, my senses, the game presentation down
there. And now with the lights, the LED lights.
The lights are unbelievable. I was tripping in there, like, but 2nd and 9 in the second quarter, it's like, zoom, like, what is going on? It's 2nd and 9. And they had some cheesy, John Rook wasn't there for the stadium announcement, so it was like, Mr. Hey, it's 2nd and 9. It's like,
it's
God.
Another Patriots, a first down.
Yeah, who was that?
His ears were bleeding.
Oh, my God. Well, so anyway, that's what that was. What number am I on? Number 6, biggest non-story story of the first half.
The helmet rule.
Thank you.
And I knew
that was a setup.
That's why I didn't talk about it all training camp and preseason, because I knew they weren't going to call it during the regular season, but everybody else is like, ah, this isn't football. Ah, what are you doing in the game? Ah!
Le'Veon Bell, to me, like Pittsburgh's found its groove. I'm tired of hearing about that effing guy. Seriously, enough of Le'Veon Bell. Non-story.
Great minds think alike, Maz. That's what I had. Le'Veon Bell's holdout. Something I couldn't have been more wrong about that. James Conner has stepped in and done a more than admirable job.
So when are you going to give up the running back thing, Murray?
Never. I'm dug in.
My honorable mention, by the way, was Cordarrelle Patterson.
But you're acknowledging, well, I'm not going to argue with you, Murray. It's just right there in front of your eyes.
Ditko over there. He gave up his whole draft for a running back.
Exactly. Ridiculous. It's the helmet rule. It's the helmet thing. You watch these games across the league, guys are getting cracked with the helmet. Their guys are leading with their helmets. They're putting their heads down. They're in with the crown and like all over the place. And it's not called a complete and utter non-factor, just an August story. That's the biggest non-story story of the first half by far.
I think Halak has been better than Tuca.
Thank you, Bruce. Number 5. Latest in our series. Biggest tool bag of the first half.
I agree with his stance, but I'm going to say Le'Veon Bell just because it's been a whole back and forth, this and that. Enough. Just come play football.
Tool bag.
Hugh Jackson,
oh,
please. You're going to win like one game over 2 years and then all of a sudden go 2-5 or whatever the hell you were and then say, well, if they had let me do this before, we would have won the 2 games. Oh, great. Like, you loser, please.
I went with
Hugh Jackson.
John Gruden, everything that he's touched has turned to crap so far there in Oakland. 10 years. God knows how much, hundreds of millions he's making. He's in over his head there.
I'm telling you, the first half of the dynasty... Dynasty. The first half of the of the dynastic run. The synapses weren't firing there quite properly. Number four, fill in the blank, Greggy. The overall quality of play across the league has been
crap. I mean, it's just, I hate it. I hate all the offense. I hate the terrible tackling and the terrible line play and all this stuff. It's crap.
He's insulted by the terrible line play.
Yes.
You know, this is something that bothers me on a weekly basis.
Guys can't pull anymore. You know,
the bad line play, it does. It's the first thing on my list. I would just say devoid of I actually think the offense in the league is good. It should be. Because you can't play defense. So to me, the quality of the play is devoid of defense. It's like flag football. It drives me crazy.
Well, the word I would use is fun. If they're going to make the game less violent and less emphasis on defense, open it up, make it more entertaining, and they have.
Next. And if you don't want sucky matchups, don't suck.
Yeah, try not to suck.
Yeah, make a t-shirt out of that. Number three, I like this question. If you ranked the 17 Patriots teams under Tom Brady, and this is his 17th year, so this is number 17, okay? If you ranked all 17 of those teams under Tom Brady, where would this one rank? What number out of the 17?
So what you said is rank the five worst teams in Patriots
history. And then I said rank the five worst. So give me your bottom five. If this isn't in the bottom five, give me your bottom five. But first tell me, where does this team rank of the 17?
Okay, so I have them as the fifth worst team. Okay.
Go ahead.
I have fourth worst is 2013.
Hold on. Go from worst to please.
Okay. So number one, the worst.
Yep.
2011 to me was the least talented team.
The team that went to the Super Bowl.
That almost won the Super Bowl. It was Belichick's greatest coaching performance ever.
2011.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't think. Julian Edelman's playing cornerback in the AFC Championship game.
Next.
Matthew Slater's playing safety.
Next.
2002. 2009, 2013.
Again, where they went to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, but man, wasn't that like Austin Colley and like they had no
Slater on the
first. We all knew they didn't have any chance. Yeah, and who man? And then this year's team.
So you're the fifth worst Patriots team under Tom Brady. The fifth worst.
Yes.
Okay, Naz?
Okay, to me, the worst is 2009. That team was disgraceful. Like, it was detestable, and they weren't that good. Second was 02. Third was 05. Fourth was 2011, and this year's team is fifth worst.
So fifth worst still.
Yep. I don't think they're very good.
Seventh worst Patriots team of this era. My first three are just like Maz, 09, 02, 05. Fourth worst is 2013. Fifth, 2005. Sixth, 2012. And then this one at seventh.
2012.
Yeah. Too much Welker, too much Brandon Lloyd. They get waxed at home in the AFC Championship game by the Ravens. Yuck.
Okay, so this is, in terms of the Patriots teams under Tom Brady, consensus bottom half, arguably bottom five.
Sure.
Interesting. Next.
He's just so good.
Thank you. He is, Bill. Number two, who has been your least favorite Patriots opponent this year? Who disgusted you the most? Who did you look at this year and just want to barf?
The Bills. Specifically, the Bills offense. Putrid.
Miami. Buffalo's got no talent. Like, I look at Buffalo and go, all right, fine, this is a layup. You're playing a high school team, for crying out loud. Miami's got players.
That was a fake win.
Oh, God, were they pathetic. That was disgusting.
You mean the 5-4 Miami Dolphins?
The Dolphins, for that game in Foxborough, the Dolphins should have to give 50% of all ticket prices back to fans for not showing up. That was disgraceful.
No, Greg's right on this. It's the Buffalo Bills. And having to do the post game, which Greg joins us on sometimes.
Every week?
Oh, God. That game, most of it I spent like, what have I done with my life? I'm making bad decisions. Like, this is dumb. Why am I even up for this? It's the Bills.
Last one. Monday Night Football, too.
Last one.
Great year, all that. So, I think Mookie Betts is a problem.
Hey, number one. Fill in the blank. Another fill in the blank. Malcolm Butler's poor play this year in Tennessee makes you feel blank.
Happy that I wrote about his issues last year and that I said, look, he deserved to be benched in the Super Bowl. It was building to that. I didn't think it would be in the Super Bowl, but it did not surprise me that Bill benched him at some point because he deserved it. This is the way he played last year. And nobody wanted to say it.
Hold on. Did you say that after the AFC Championship game? That he deserved to be benched?
No, in December, I wrote, he's trending to being benched.
I'm asking you, after the AFC Championship game, did you write or feel that he deserved to be benched after he played every single snap? No, you did not. Do you think he was right? So did you feel vindicated that he was benched the entire Super Bowl?
I feel vindicated that I wrote about his struggles, that he was getting benched was on the table.
Okay, for the whole game.
It's about being. It's about being right.
Yeah,
is what
exactly.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me. Made me depressed. I feel melancholy. That's what I feel. I wanted him to be good so bad, just because I was rooting for him as much as anything else. It isn't about necessarily, you know, proving Belichick wrong. I just wanted him to be good.
I'm with Maz on this. I'm sad for him. He got hosed in the Super Bowl, and this is a guy that I thought should have been one of the all-time greats here. The way it looked after that Super Bowl, he was awesome in 2015, and it was trending that way until last season.
Hosed.
Okay.
He was playing like crap the whole year. And just because they didn't have any other cornerbacks, you know, Jonathan Jones gets hurt in the AFC Championship game. Eric Rose on like half a groin. They, whatever.
He's disgusted.
No. So what happened? So all of a sudden, this is the first time I've heard you really give this take.
What are you talking about?
Defending?
I wrote a whole column about how he was going to be benched in December.
No. Okay, December, right.
You didn't the last month of the season, like before the playoffs.
No. So you think Bill's justified not to use him at all, not one single snap?
If Bill thought that, he could have benched him just on his play.
Huh?
We talked about this.
No, you have not defended this to this point. Someone has gotten to you or something has happened
here. This is not true.
Something has happened here.
We talked about it in the wake of the Super Bowl.
You have never delivered it like this. You've never done it like this. This is new. What happened? What changed your mind? What turned you?
I will say that I remember him saying he was worried about Butler because Butler was peeking into the back.
No.
That I remember.
We all acknowledge he was playing poorly and things. He wasn't having a great year. Like, everyone knew that. To the point where you don't bring him in for one snap or one series when no one else can cover anyone in the biggest game of the year?
I probably would have brought him in the second half at some point.
Right, that's the whole point.
Right. But
now, got to you.
Nobody got to me.
Someone got to him. Someone got to the big fella.
Uh-huh.
Like, now all of a sudden it's like Bill was right to bench Malcolm. Does Malcolm Butler's poor play make you feel that way? Do you go back and look at the Super Bowl differently now that Malcolm Butler sucks in Tennessee?
No, he should have played at least a couple of snaps in that game.
Oh, my God. Of course he should have.
Why? So he could have gotten roasted just like he did on in this game?
And then you pull him out? Bill's done this a million times with a million different guys. He did it in the previous Super Bowl against Seattle.
Bill was right. This is whatever's happened in Tennessee, it just shows he was justified for putting Malcolm on the bench.
In the entire Super Bowl?
Sure. Whatever.
You're out of your mind, Craig.
I can't believe someone got you. You've never expressed that before. You've never expressed
that before. Well, certainly what he's done this year has made me feel more strongly about it.
That he shouldn't have played one single snap. Is Jonathan Batamosi even in the league?
How about Jordan Richards?
Are those guys even in the league? Honestly, I'm asking. I don't even know where they went. Where are they?
Batamosi's on the Texans.
He is.
Yes.
Richards was in Atlanta, I think. Yeah, I don't know if he made the team.
Yeah, they were talking about, you know, because it's one of the worst players they've ever had.
Oh, but
because he is.
What? Something happened. This is unbelievable.
Bill was right.
Oh, my God.
Bill was right.
Unbelievable. Well, no, not. Not believe. I've seen it happen.
I bet you got a package in the mail.
I've seen it happen. I just want to know what exactly Bedard got out of it. Now I got to pay attention to your stuff so I can say, well, this is where this is coming from. I got it now. I'm on to you.
I'm not some of these other outlets that get the little scraps from the Patriots.
Pick this up on the other side. Here's Murray's update.
Miss something?
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Mass.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports.
Second and 10 as Cooper just looks on. Wide open touchdown, Allen Hurts. Good call by Scott Linehan and good execution. Fakes it in. You know Butler. Malcolm Butler, the corner. Line one for him in the scouting report is he's aggressive corner. They wanted to run that double move, fake the under out, and then go behind there. Dak Prescott, he knew it. That was the matchup he wanted.
You know, and Butler's been getting victimized all season long, guys. He's been giving up deep touchdowns every other game. As a high-priced corner that came over from New England after what happened in the Super Bowl where you didn't play and Bill Belichick benched you, hasn't performed well for the Tennessee Titans this year.
But he's aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, and you really study him, and I love the way that he plays. But he doesn't have the ball skills necessarily to back that up.
He's such an aggressive player, and I think what you saw him both of those plays is his aggressiveness toward that first move. And the first one where Amari Cooper ran in and then back out, he was open. And just the one that just happened with the Hearns started out and then in and then back up. So it's a, you know, when it works, it's great. And I think, you know, you've got to try to be patient to a degree. Most DBs are relatively patient, but Malcolm's being super aggressive tonight. And, you know, they beat him for two touchdowns on it.
Malcolm Butler's night, and Tom Brady at halftime with Jim Gray proving that is not a taped interview because Brady gave you live commentary of a couple touchdowns that just happened minutes earlier.
I got the hotline.
So that was live and in person and not canned and not recorded and not spliced together. Brady reacting to Malcolm Butler last night. Someone got to Bedard. Let me ask Jim Murray, who's a Patriots honk too, but does Malcolm Butler sucking this year make you change your mind on how that was handled last year in the Super Bowl?
No, and this is really starting to go up my chute sideways because it was all over my Twitter feed last night. It's from the Bill Does No Wrong crew every single week that Malcolm Butler's getting turned inside out by another wide receiver, and it has happened nonstop throughout this season. I see the gif or the video. I'm like, okay, I get it. He sucks now. Bill was right. We were wrong. Ha ha, Murray. You were wrong, you dummy. He was right to move on from Butler.
Wrong about the Super Bowl?
Well, no, let me finish.
Two different things.
Let me finish. He was right to move on from him. But what I don't like is the not-so-silent undercurrent that also goes along with this, because the same people that are posting this kind of stuff are also saying he was right to bench him in Super Bowl 52, don't you know? Because Johnson Badamosi and Jordan Richards were better options. No, they weren't. Not for at least one or two plays. Again, the Nelson Aguilar 17-yard gain where he was caught and Badamosi loses him, and he could have made that tackle. Butler makes that tackle. He played close to 90% of the snaps last year.
Oh,
you can't
it doesn't change the story.
It doesn't change the story.
I see you're getting the tweets from my burner account.
Doesn't change the story. And if Malcolm Butler, I don't have a problem with Malcolm Butler being benched per se. But when it wasn't working with the personnel that was in there, to not change up the personnel and see if you can get a different result from a different mix is unconscionable. It's, for any other coach in any other setting, it's a fireable offense.
It's pig-headed. It's stupid.
It is a fireable offense to not have an adjustment there to a personnel set that's not working when you have other able bodies on the sideline. To not do it because why? And let that come out. Let that come out, the why, and then we'll see if you still feel that way. So, doesn't change the story. One iota. And I'm not telling you it would have worked with Butler. Maybe he was that far off and his game has fallen off that much that he would have gotten beaten too. I'm not telling you that. I'm not telling you you would have won. I'm telling you not to change a personnel grouping to see if you can get a different mix or a different result. Unconscionable, indefensible. Indefensible. Any other coach in any other setting, a fireable offense.
I mean, I think Bill was wrong all the way around on this one. Like, I don't even see how fans get off saying what they say. Butler wasn't good here last year. What happened to the whole better off a year too early than year too late thing? If you were going to move him before he started...
I thought they should have traded him.
You should have traded him before the year started.
I mean, we talked about him training camp. I said he doesn't look like he wants to be here. He looks pissed off.
No, you were on him. I mean, that's fine. I never heard you say don't let him play a single snap in the biggest game of the year when everyone else can't make a play. I never heard you say that. I never heard anyone say that until now. Until it's the boo-hoo Bill crew and that whole thing, which really isn't even worth talking to those people, Murray, is it? Like, I mean, what's really the point there of engaging that? So, anyway.
I mean, could he have been benched for like a half and then put in when they were struggling?
Yes.
That probably should have gone on, and I think I've said that the whole time. But, you know, that the Patriots decided to start Malcolm Butler on the bench against that team, against that sort of offense and his aggressive nature, it was a little bit of a surprise, but it wasn't a complete shock.
Fine. By the time you get to the third and fourth quarter and you can't make a play, that's where the story is. All right, back to your phones. Here's another expatriate on the Titans that I think bears watching this week as well. John in Maryland. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. This is a question for Greg Bedard. Deion Lewis, he still looks like he can ball out. Do you think, in hindsight, the Patriots management is saying, hey, we should pay Deion Lewis, use that first-round pick, maybe like an outside linebacker, coincidentally taken in the high second round by Tennessee, a Boston College guy. I think his name's Harold Landry.
So I'm not going to that, John. I'm sorry to cut you off. We're just short on time. Your thoughts on them not re-signing Deion Lewis and what can happen this week with Lewis? Does he scare you?
You knew it was going to happen because they didn't value running backs until they drafted Sonny Michel in the first round. Suddenly, I guess they did. But you knew that was going to, we all knew that was going to happen. He was going to get more someplace else. The Patriots weren't going to pay because we don't pay for running backs because they get hurt and all these other things. And look, Deion Lewis is doing a great job, and I expect him, he's going to want to put it on the Patriots in this game. Like, I think he feels disrespected about what happened, about how, like, I don't even think he played all that much in the Super Bowl, did he?
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Nope.
Like, I don't think he's happy about all that stuff. And is it going to make a difference? I don't know.
He worries me this week. I mean, the Patriots can't cover backs, and you now you have a motivated one on the other side that Tennessee loves to throw to.
And Vrabel has to know that. Absolutely,
the Patriots. Mariota loves to dump it down because he's not a great passer.
No, this is a factor. Deion Lewis is a factor, And I think Malcolm Butler will too. You know, and what was
they're going to go after him?
Okay, well let's.
They're probably running double moves with Josh Gordon in practice starting tomorrow. They're going to run it every day, like 50 times. Like, let's go to the slant twice, and then all of a sudden we're going to go up the field.
So, I mean, that's what I would do too. But something happened in the second half last night. No one's mentioned in the second half that Tennessee pretty much totally shut Dallas down. And I didn't see them go back to any sort of Malcolm Butler highlight pack or anything like that. But whatever they did, there was an adjustment there in the second half. Dallas wasn't getting beat over the top. Malcolm Butler wasn't getting beat on double moves. They weren't getting beat on anything. And again, unless I look at the all 22 or see a specific breakdown of it, I can't tell you exactly what happened. But I watched the game. I saw the score. I saw Dallas not move the ball. And I didn't see Malcolm Butler involved in any big plays against in the second half. Something happened there.
I mean, I'm telling you, I don't love this matchup this week. I think the Patriots caught a little bit of a break last night that Tennessee won.
Totally, absolutely.
Because if Tennessee loses that game, now they're going to be pissed off on top of it.
Well,
so I like their chances better than I did before the game. But honestly, to me, this feels a little bit like a, dare I say, a trap game. Like, you know, and not that Tennessee sucks, but I can see the Patriots looking past this one.
I was just going to say, I don't know where these passes happen in the game. And I'm no big fan of Pro Football Focus's coverage stats, especially when they had Devin McCourty as an elite corner. In the Colts game where he gave up 2.5 touchdowns, they had him for almost a 90 coverage grade in that game. But they have him for Butler giving up 8 receptions on 11 targets, 108 yards, 7 first downs, 2 touchdowns.
My question is how much was in the second half?
Right.
It's clear in the first half he was getting torched up and down the field. Absolutely. In the second, Dallas couldn't leak a drop. So I just wonder if Vrabel there, or they protected him, or maybe they took him off the field. Like, I don't even know.
That or just Dallas is no good on offense.
Or something. All
or
I know
gave
is
safety help.
Something happened. Something happened in the second half because Tennessee shut him down. We'll wrap it up with Greg and your thoughts right after this in our long commercial-free segment.
What can we say about Felger and Maz that you haven't already screamed in your car?
Sit on that one, bitch, and spin.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The message after a thrilling win like that when you got to come back and play the Patriots in 6 days, as you just said?
What's the message? Just said, hey, congratulations. Proud of you. Happy for you. You guys deserve all the credit. But we got to get healthy. We got to get healthy quick. We got to get our bumps and bruises looked at, and we got to get a lift in sometime tomorrow or Wednesday morning, and we got to meet, and we got to move on to the Patriots. That's what the message was.
That's old friend Mike Vrabel. Titans head coach. I just sort of like that answer. You know, big Monday night win pretty much saves their season last night. Monday night road win at Dallas. I don't care if Dallas is mediocre. That's just a sexy win. Like, it's a win you can hang your hat on. You walk into Dallas on Monday Night Football, win that game. Again, salvage your season. Now you got the Patriots coming up. And they asked Vrabel, what's the message to the team? He says, congratulations, but now we got to get healthy and we got to get a lift in. I liked what he said, we got to get a lift in. We got to lift in before Wednesday. It's like such a football thing to say, right? Like, he's not worried about the record or what. We know we got to get a lift in. Everybody's got to go lift. And I don't know. If I'm a Titans fan, I like that answer. It's like he's not thinking of anything else other than the next practice, the lift that you got to get in. And, you know, we put in the game plan for Green Bay on Wednesday, so be ready. Like, I just sort of feel that's, I think Vrabel, From that standpoint, I think Vrabel's a great choice down there. I don't know what Vrabel's going to do for Mariota and the offense and the quarterback, which I think is so important in the league now, Greg. Like, if I were starting over with a coach, I want a coach that has that relationship with that quarterback and mentors him and all that stuff. I don't know if Vrabel can do that, being a linebacker and a defensive coach. But, like, that other stuff relating to players and that tone, like, I think he's excellent for that job.
I mean, the mentality, too. I like they've been aggressive. They play to win games, right? That whole thing with the overtime earlier in the year and all of it. So, I don't know. I told you, I don't love the matchup this week for the Patriots. And normally, you look at it and say, well, they're better than Tennessee, and they are. But I don't know. You got to go in there. Tennessee's got a pretty good defense. They got a couple of guys on their team that are motivated to play against you. The Patriots are coming off a pretty good win. They got a bye week coming up. Like, this one, and they haven't been good on the road. Like, this feels to me like they could get bitten in the ass this week.
I will say that there are going to be a ton of Patriots fans at this game.
Oh, this is going to be ridiculous. This is going to be like a Baltimore Orioles game.
I mean, I've never seen demand like this for a road game. I mean, I guess this is sort of the designated trip game because Nashville's awesome. But, I mean, even I have family members who are wacko Patriots fans who are going. I mean, it's going to be, I would say, like half, a third of the stadium is going to be Patriots fans. For this
yeah,
game.
Brother. This wacko over here is going to go, too.
Wacko. Get ready, Nashville, for a big, fat dose of masshole right on your face.
Where's this coming. Hot chicken we've been hearing about? Where can we find the hot chicken?
It's coming. Or we're going to come down there and take a steaming dump on your town. Just wait.
Yeah, where can I find a bar with live music?
It's coming. Ooh, you ain't seen nothing yet. You think you've got tourism. Wait. Just wait till this weekend. It's wait for about 240,000 guys in jorts and brewski jerseys with a fat sunburned face and a Bud Light in their hand. That's
yeah,
it.
Which way to Elvis's house?
Jeff in the car has something for Bedard before he leaves. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, two quick points. Bedard, you said at the beginning of the year that they improved over last year. Now they're the fifth worst team in the last 17 years. And second, the biggest game of the year against Pittsburgh, if Butler doesn't make that tackle, they lose that game. He made the biggest tackle of the year, kept the guy inbounds that led to Roethlisberger's interception. And you're going to tell me he deserved to be benched for the whole Super Bowl? Bedard, you're a fraud.
Okay, strong commentary on the way out the door, big boy. Defend yourself.
Well, first of all, I said that they should be better on defense this year. And I'm still leaving out hope that by the end of the season they are. Then they finished. They just need to be better than they were, like a 50-minute defense last year, because they had the lead in the Super Bowl. I thought that they would be better this year. I thought that Claiborne would contribute a little bit more. He has started to. But I still think by the end of the season, I think this defense will be better than the one that was in the Super Bowl last year. I still believe that. I think there's still hope for that. As far as the other thing, Butler, okay. Hey, he made a tackle. Great. I mean, he is paid to be a football player and make tackles. I mean, awesome. You know, let's forget about all the other times he got burned in games.
30 seconds, quick, because someone just mentioned, or you just mentioned Claiborne. He wasn't in your three up for the game, right? Why not?
I'm looking. He had a penalty, a missed tackle, and a couple other things. But, you know, he was fine. A lot of this stuff, Trey Flowers caused a lot of the pressure for everybody else. I mean, a lot of it was other guys cleaning up. I mean, even Claiborne's sack, you know, give it to Flowers. He moved Rodgers to start, and then, you know, the other guys clean up. Trey Flowers is just awesome.
Okay, Greggy, thanks for coming in.
All right, see you guys.
We'll see you next Tuesday with Greg Bedard. We're going to wrap up your football calls next segment. And the next hour, we've got a Celtics minute for you. Get into some of their issues. We have a Bruins minute for you. We've got a Red Sox minute for you. Controversy with the MVP vote and all of this. So we'll get into all of that. But as I said, we're going to wrap up your phone calls right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials.